So a couple of months ago, I found a questionnaire on Soch. Favorite band, least favorite band, band that changed your life. And we've all been answering this musical questionnaire. We're using Ticket staff members, and we're also dipping into the world of special celebrity guest stars. And today, taking the musical survey is our old buddy, Rhett Miller from the old 97s. Good morning, Rhett.
This is non-disclosure.
Stop. Non-disclosure. Hi, musers.
How are you?
Hi, Rhett.
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for doing this. Now, I take it you're joining us from your home in New York. Is that right?
Years ago, I built an office in the basement, and my wife thought I was crazy. And then later, when my kids were older, I painted it bright red and hung guitars all around the walls, and my kids thought I was crazy. And now I've done 40-plus gigs from this office, and this is how I feed my family and pay my mortgage from this dumb red office lined with guitars. And so, yeah, that's where I'm joining you from.
So you're saying coronavirus is good because it proves you right all the time.
Don't put words in my mouth, Gordon.
Okay. Yeah, don't do that,
okay.
Gordon.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, a lot of musical artists have been going to this format during the pandemic. How are you enjoying that? How's it working out for you to be performing these virtual shows from your office?
Well, the anxiety that I was feeling about the canceled shows, and they've all been canceled into next year as far as I know, it was bad. It was, you know, this thing that I remember my wife used to say, like, so what are you going to do? Are you going to retire? And I would say, why would I retire? I love what I do. I think I'll be able to go at least and do solo acoustic shows for the rest of my life. And it never occurred to me that that would get taken away. And so when I figured out that I could do these gigs, I still don't trust it because I still think people are going to stop showing up at them. The virtual nature of them to me makes them feel, I don't know, kind of flimsy, but they're not. They're like live. They're not archived. People show up. There's a chat room where there's a whole group of people that have developed a community, and I'm able to replace some of the lost income. And so, yeah, I'm not freaking out as bad as I was, but I still don't like that every show finds me sitting in an office chair in my house playing a gig. This is not rock and roll.
I think on the other end of it, people really do like them, and I know what you're doing is a mode of survival for you, but people really enjoy them. They miss hearing you. They miss hearing your songs live, and it's a way for them to do it. I think it's very valuable to the people who enjoy your music.
Thanks. And I didn't believe that until I did a couple of audience. I watched a couple of shows, Jason Isbell and Robin Hitchcock and my buddy Glenn Phillips. And I got it. I kind of got that feeling of, okay, this feels like being at a show. Plus, I don't have to get, you know, some 23-year-old spilling Miller Lite on my cashmere sweater or whatever.
And you got a, when's your show coming up that I'm going to be a part of?
You gave me a set list on, and this Friday, that's the thing. I've had to work in a lot of ways harder than I ever have because I'm my own booking agent. I'm my own publicist. So I've got four shows a week. On Monday, I do Monday Memories. Like last night, I did the old 97's Most Messed Up album in full with all the stories and the outtakes from the record. And on Wednesday, I do West Coast Wednesday, which is 11 o'clock my time, 8 o'clock West Coast. So it's timed better for people over there to watch the shows. Friday, I do Friday Friends, and I've had anybody from Nick Offerman to Tig Notaro, and this Friday it'll be Gordon Keith. They'll give me a set list and they'll of my songs, solo and 97s, and then they'll give me a challenge cover to learn. So I've got to learn somebody else's song that I've never played before, and that's been a really good sort of shtick to bring people back. And on Sundays, I do an overseas Sunday show in the afternoon. So if you're in London, it's well-timed for you.
Get your Jerry Reed chops ready.
Yeah,
for Friday.
I sent Rhett his set list recently, and that's coming up on Friday. So P1s can tune in to see what challenges I've thrown Rhett's way.
Yes.
All right, and this morning, Rhett joins us to take the musical questionnaire, the survey. And without further ado, Rhett, we're going to let you get to it. Rhett Miller from the old 97s now taking us through his list and his responses.
Well, I've loved listening to you guys do these. I really loved listening to you musers do them. But then just the last couple of weeks, hearing Robert Wolanski and hearing Corby, it's so fascinating, because is anything a better peek into one's, you know, like upbringing and personality and demeanor than the music that they love? And so this was, for me, this was really nerve-wracking coming up with this list, because I live inside of the music business. I guess Wolanski does a little bit too, because he's written so much about it. But I had to really try to keep like envy, for one thing. In the music world, there's just a lot of that. Why are they making, you know, why do they have 20 million spins when I only have 3 million spins? Are they really 7 times better than I am? That whole thing. So that, and then, you know, I've got a lot of personal interactions with. In the end, I decided I'm just going to answer them as best I can. Like first, you know, like my first instinct, I sort of went with that. So for band I hate, it would have been really easy to go with a band like everybody hates: Creed, Tool, Limp Bizkit, something like that. It would have been easy for me to go with a band that I think is actually pretty good, even though they sort of started a trend that's super annoying. Like for a while, the Lumineers. For a while, we had a joke in our band, like, what kind of band are you in? Oh, I'm in that kind of band where we go, hey! Like, And also, I did a gig on Austin City Limits Festival with the Lumineers right when they were exploding, and we were playing after them on the stage, and they wouldn't let me or any of my crew or band members on the stage, like we were the side of the stage where we were supposed to set up our equipment to do our job. They wouldn't let us up there. They were really, anyway, whatever. It's not
really.
The Lumineers.
Oh,
yeah. Wow. It's not the Lumineers. The band I hate, and this is just my visceral reaction right away. I hate. Jared, you want to hit it? This is like a needle into my eyeball whenever this stupid little thing starts.
Yes! Yes! Yes!
It's so important, right? You can tell how important it is.
It's very important, right?
Okay, so that's the band Coldplay.
Ooh, listen to the hatred.
So much. And I will tell you this. Their very first song, Yellow, was a fetching little tune.
Agreed.
And the guy that directed that video, James Frost, directed my video for Come Around and had nothing but kind things to say about that band. In fact, a couple of months after that, before they had blown up to what they've since become, we were both boarding a flight to go to a radio convention together, and I was right behind the drummer, and I said, hey, my name's Rhett, we're going to the same convention, I just finished making a video with your buddy James, and you know, like that thing, the British, he's like, really, and then just turned around, like he could not be bothered even to pretend that he had nothing but disdain for me.
Pesky little American songwriter. I don't need to hear from you right now.
I'm like, bro, you're the drummer in a stupid bit. Anyway, let's nothing against drummers.
That's what you should have said. Right, was that a hard one for you to say that you hate somebody in the music business, though?
It doesn't sound like it was, does it?
No, it doesn't. Sounds like it came pretty easy. I think that's awesome.
Whoa, what?
Just get over yourself,
okay,
would you?
All right.
Oh, I get it. yeah, man, I started to try and worm my way out of it by going with one of the obvious. Like, Limp Bizkit was going to be my answer for a while, and then I thought, that's just too easy. And in truth, when I first met Jack White and Meg White, it was early on in their career, and it was the same thing. We were at an airport boarding a flight, and I was so excited, and I tried to introduce myself, and it was like 7 a.m. and they didn't want to talk. And so for years I thought, oh, those guys are jerks. Guess what? Jack White is the nicest guy in the world. So yeah, it's just, you can't really judge somebody by how nice they are in line at an airport. But I still hate their music.
Have you ever hated a band and then you met them and they were so nice that you just lost the will to rag on them?
So mini. You don't even know. There's a phenomenon for that in music. Because so much of like backstage talk is driven by, oh, can you believe how terrible this band is? And then you meet them, and inevitably, about a third of the time, they are great. And obviously, I can't name names, but it's a phenomenon that we call GGBB. Great guy, bad band.
All right, what's next? What's the next category?
Jeez, kill it, Jer. I like how it starts with the two negatives. All right, so the band that I think is overrated, it could have been Grateful Dead, and I would have felt bad for Corby, but I do think, wasn't that Roberts overrated? It could have been, and I don't want to say this, but I have to be my true self. My brother picked U2, so I had to go anti-U2.
Oh, my God.
I spent my whole life thinking U2 was overrated, but I will say this. I did go years ago. I was managed by the same team that managed Kings of Leon, and they were opening for U2 at Madison Square Garden. And so I went backstage, and they walked right past me when they were going on stage. And guess what? They're actual human beings, like real people, and they seemed excited to go play Madison Square Garden. And then I went out and stood in the front row, and I will not say they're overrated. They work incredibly hard.
There you go.
I don't know.
There you
GGBB on them.
They're not my band, but they're more my brother's band. And my brother Ross is a really cool guy, but he picked them, and we had to go opposite directions because we're brothers.
Okay,
fair
enough.
I could easily also have gone with Kiss. I think.
There you go.
And I have a bandmate, Philip, loves Kiss, and I just never got it. They seem so creepy and gross and stupid. And I have a buddy that ghost wrote a book for Gene Simmons, and his stories about Gene only reinforce all of my preconceived notions about Kiss.
Yes.
Okay, so the band I went with isn't a band, it's a guy. He was in a band, The Yardbirds, which was the closest he ever got to being palatable. But let's hear it, Jer.
Oh!
What a wanker.
So you're saying Eric Clapton is overrated?
So overrated.
Wow. He said it. He said it.
Oh, he's saying it.
He's bringing it today.
Sorry, is that a cold take? Is everybody
no, that's
know?
Fine.
In case you're just tuning in, this is Rhett Miller ruining his career on Sports Radio 1310.
I mean, you know, Jared, I've had a similar view. I've always liked Clapton songs until he starts singing.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I always like the riffs, and I like how the song's going, and then when he starts singing, I just...
He doesn't have a bad voice.
I know, it grates on me somehow.
Huh. So yeah, this is like known as one of the greatest musical rivalries going. Rhett Miller and Eric Clapton have been fighting for years. Wouldn't it be funny if we could get a gossip rag story about Rhett Miller and Eric Clapton falling out?
So Rhett, do you think he's an overrated guitar player or just all-around performer?
Well, see, that may be the problem. I have never been a big fan of guitar wanking. You know, like when Gordon talks about going to a guitar center just to like unwind, and that's his place of zen. When I walk into Guitar Center, it's a military operation. I need to get the hell out of there because guitar solos drive me crazy. And I hesitate to bring this up, but then when Eric Clapton cashed in on his son falling out the window.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Rhett.
Wow. Yeah.
It's called writing a song, from not the cashing heart, in. Yeah. writing about the things that moved him and were the most important emotional experiences of his life.
All right.
We don't call that cashing in.
You cannot defend... Babe, you look wonderful tonight.
It's a great song to learn cowboy chords on.
I always hated this song. I'm with you.
Really?
Yeah, I hate
this song.
Does
that guitar power you down?
Yes. Hate it.
What about that voice that he has?
Yeah, the voice, I know. It's a pretty song, but the voice kills me. It's like...
Yes.
It sounds like he does not care. He sounds like the drummer for Coldplay.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Let's go on to a positive.
Yeah, well, we're off to a rip-roaring start, but we do have to hit a ticker here.
Okay.
When we come back, Rhett will answer band he thinks is underappreciated, band he loves, and band he can listen to over and over.
It's going to be old 97s for old all three, by the way.
Stay tuned. Rhett Miller taking the musical survey continues next. We are right in the middle of our newly revamped Biggest Show Coming to Town segment. Joining us, our special guest star, Rhett Miller from the old 97s, taking the Musers musical survey. Okay, Rhett, we left off with band that you think is underappreciated,
yes.
I believe. Band you think is underappreciated.
Well, obviously, the old 97s.
Yeah, I told you!
No, that's not my answer. That's my honorable mention. And also, I thought about Elvis Costello, but and in fact, I think those were the answers, or the honorable mention of Corby and Robert Wolanski.
Mm-hmm.
My band that I think is underappreciated is a band with a really strong frontman, great songwriter. He composed what I would consider the perfect pop song.
I told you, all 97s.
And the problem that this band faced, I think, is because in 1965, when they could have been a part of the British invasion that launched the Beatles and the Stones to the prominence that they have, you know, now have achieved, this band got banned from the United States by like a powerful musicians union. And they weren't allowed to perform in the United States until late 1969. And it was like those were the four greatest years of this band. So my most underappreciated band is the Kinks.
This is a great choice.
Love the Kinks.
I love the Kinks. I love his voice.
Yeah. And that like that song is a beautiful song. But they also have really rockin' songs. Dave Davies, Ray's brother, is the guitar player in the band and is often credited with having invented the punk rock guitar sound because he had a really little amplifier. And during the recording of You Really Got Me or All Day and All of the Night, Jared, do you have All Day and All of the Night queued up? We talked about that. Listen to that.
That's so great.
He walked over and shoved a screwdriver through the speaker cone, ripped it open, and that's the guitar sound that basically started punk rock.
Huh.
Wow.
And these guys had fewer top 10 hits in the United States than the Dave Clark Five, the Hollies, Herman's Hermits. These guys should be up there with the Beatles, the Stones, the Who, the Kinks. It should be those four bands from that era, and they're always left off that list.
Yep.
Love the Kinks.
Yeah. Oh my God, so good.
That's great.
All right. There's a
What's
band
next?
I love.
Band you love?
The band I love. God, the next two are a little bit. Very similar. They both their greatest records were both produced by Tony Visconti, the band I love and the band I can listen to over and over again. The band I love is mostly, again, like a really strong frontman, singer, songwriter, Mark Bolan. He died in a car crash after a night out pubbing. He had borrowed a car from who's the drummer?
Grace Kelly?
No, Keith Moon. He'd borrowed a car from Keith Moon, and his girlfriend was driving it, smashed it into a tree, and he died. But Mark Bolan was a great frontman, great songwriter. So, Jer, hit us with some T-Rex. Big, fat guitar riffs all day.
Trying to write my novel, but all you do is fade. Baby boomerang. Baby boomerang.
And it's hard to pick. It's hard to pick which T-Rex song is. I mean, I didn't want to go with the ones you know. They had one that the Power Station covered, "Bang a Gong, Get It On," mutilated their song. Sorry.
Hey, watch it.
I know. But actually, Jer, real quick, could you throw on the opening riff of "Jeepster," the other song?
I like Power Station's version of this better, too.
Okay, so the band I can listen to over and over again, the records that I love most from him were also produced by this same guy, Tony Visconti. So you can tell my wheelhouse is very much like mid-70s British kind of glam rock. I don't know why this just connected with me, but my number one all-time, and he could have been the answers to every positive question on this list, is David Bowie.
Ah. It's a god-awful small affair to the girl with the mousy hair, but her mommy is yelling no, and her daddy has told her to go, but her friend is nowhere to be seen. Now she walks. I'm realizing that the songs I chose for these bands, especially the Kinks and Bowie, they're like the prettier songs, but there's a lot of rock in their catalogs as well.
Yeah.
I found out recently that Bowie lived the last bunch of years of his life about half an hour away from me in the mountains here in New York. And I hired a new pool guy, cue the Vivaldi. And thank you. And in, he was telling me, I yelled for my dog Ziggy, and he goes, "Is your dog named after David Bowie?" And I said, "Yeah, we got him right after Bowie died, and I'm a huge David Bowie fan." He goes, "I was David Bowie's pool guy."
Wow. Whoa.
So I don't mean to brag, but I got that going.
You got that going for you.
It's a pretty strong link.
Did you ever meet Bowie?
No. And I've written over the years, I wrote a number of letters that I never sent, asking him if he would produce an album, asking, just like reaching out to him. And I just never sent them. I don't know why. I think I was afraid of having my Bowie ruined, you know, by the real person. And from everything I can gather, like the real David Bowie was even sweeter and better than the Bowie you would want. And so...
But you didn't want to catch him on a bad day.
Yeah, I just didn't want
him. When he was fighting with the pool guy or something.
I didn't want him to act like the drummer from Coldplay.
And right.
But I did find out about a year ago, someone said to me, "Hey, I was at a gig of yours at that little club in New York City, the Fez. And Bowie snuck in right after you started and sat in a corner booth by himself and watched your whole show." And so wow. I started doing like the detective work to figure out if this could be true. I knew Bowie lived on the block where that club was. And so I finally talked to somebody that worked there and said, "Yeah, Bowie came in all the time. We had a booth where we put him in the corner." And, you know, it wasn't 100% confirmation, but it sounds like David Bowie sat and watched a whole show of mine, which is...
That's great.
Very weird.
That is cool.
I wish I'd
T Rex and Bowie both influences for you as far as Giant. How you tried to write and yeah.
Yeah, you know, Bowie, because he was all over the place and I really love that the scope, and I've kind of let that be a guiding principle for me with the band and solo records, is that there's no rules. Just because somebody thinks the old 97s are alt country doesn't mean everything we ever do has to be alt country, you know? And
yeah.
And I think that's been good for us because it's kept things vital and new. And, you know, we're 27 years into our band now. And I think if we had felt like we had to really stay in one lane all the time. So that's one thing I learned from Bowie. There was a specific moment where Lisa Loeb, the Dallas's own Lisa Loeb, the Ticket's own, I'm sure.
Sure.
Lisa Loeb, I was going out with her little sister Debbie, and when I was like 14 years old, Lisa took Debbie and I to see the Sirius Moonlight Tour. Bowie came off. We had seats right on the side of Reunion Arena. Bowie came off the stage before the encore, and I was such a big Bowie fan already. And I saw him walk over to the steps, and one of his crew members put a towel around his neck. Another handed him a lit cigarette. Another handed him a cocktail tumbler. And he stood there all by himself for, I don't know, 90 seconds while 17,000 people chanted, Bowie, Bowie. And I had seats where I was about as close as I could have been. And all I could think was, I want that job.
That was your moment.
Yep.
That's great.
And the reason I found David Bowie was because of my next answer, which is the band that made me fall in love with music. I already knew I loved music. I loved to sing. I loved to make up songs. I was in choir. But the thing that made me feel this kind of weird tickle in my stomach that made me feel like, oh, this is better than all the other things I love. I really love books. Books don't give me this tickle. It was, I got really sick in fourth grade, and I wound up in the hospital for like 3 months with this kind of mysterious inner ear imbalance. And I had a vinyl album player, like a little standalone album player. And I had two LPs with me, both Joan Jett records. And Joan Jett was I was so in love with her. It was that combination of the budding hormones that were flooding me, also the ignorance of her sexual orientation.
Yeah.
But something about, Jer, play my favorite Joan Jett song.
Oh. Yeah, I love this.
Play with her at the crazy festival at the Death Star last year. We played right before.
Oh
her.
Yeah, there's like a million artists.
It was great, and I got to meet her, and she was very sweet. Hey, New York. all right, I know we only have a few minutes left, and I don't want to skip any of this stuff. So, when I was 8 years old, my parents took me to see a band called the Kingston Trio. I didn't know that they were as square a band as there was in the world. And they were so funny, and their between song banter was so funny. Jer, if you could just right cue now, up the Live from the Hungry Eye album. This is Zombie Chambery.
Every year in Trinidad, they have what is known as a Calypsonian Carnival, in which the various native groups down there vie with one another musically, in order to find out who's the best extemporaneous composer of them all. Yes, and in the year 1955, Lord Invader
such
and his
nerd.
12 penetrators
was like Jeff Goldblum
with this next song based on a theme by Goethe involving the Dance of the Dead. Well,
Goethe jokes, they always kill.
Experience, so he called it, of course, Zombie Jamboree, the song that killed Calypso.
Of course. Okay, no.
So, they were a folk music trio from like basically the 1950s, early 60s. And I watched them play and I thought, these are just guys that look like my dad and they're just standing there with acoustic guitars. Like, how hard could this be? And that was when I decided I wanted to start like making up songs with funny words that I thought were kind of clever and that made me laugh and think. And
cool. I never would have guessed that.
I wouldn't have guessed this one either. But George, your observation is exactly correct. It's surprising how much that guy sounds like Jeff Goldblum.
Just like it. Yeah. Same cadence.
Same cadence as he's talking. It's so weird.
Based on a book by Goethe. All right. So let's skip on to the next one, if that's all right. The band that surprised me. I took my daughter, Soleil, and a couple of her friends last year to Madison Square Garden to a show that I did not anticipate enjoying, and it blew me away. All the way from the pre-show music, which was like Bad Brains and punk rock and rock and roll, to the show itself, which was one guy walking around on stage singing to tracks. We've got a clean version of this. This is Tyler, the Creator. Don't be an 11-minute intro. Come on, Tyler.
He's saying Ford Escape.
I know what I'm showing. Feelings I is your motive.
And I wish there's a lot of that.
Because I'm sorry, this is not an apology. You are such a distraction. That's what Tion are.
So, I don't know if the recorded version of Tyler, the Creator, especially in a 20-second snippet, is going to convey the energy that his show did. But it brought me back to seeing, like, the 930 Club, you know, seeing punk rock shows. It was so intense and so well put on, and the music was so intelligent. And, man, I didn't anticipate coming out of that place being a Tyler, the Creator fan. And here we are.
Man, you could have given me 1,000 guesses. Band that surprised you, I wouldn't have guessed Tyler, the Creator.
See, I've got Tyler, the Creator and Kingston Trio in my prediction list that I have here.
Boy, has there ever been a bigger disparity between one and the other? Guilty Pleasure is funny because I had a hard time with this one because I think assigning guilt, just it's such a judgment. You know, if I liked Coldplay, that would be an ultimate guilty pleasure. But I don't. Lana Del Rey sprang to mind because I really love Lana Del Rey, and I know it's supposed to be kind of like light pop, but I think her stuff is really interesting and multi-layered. Motley Crue, which is funny because that was Corby's most hated band. Like those first Motley Crue records to me, that is rock and roll in its distilled form. But my actual guilty pleasure is a band that is only described by two adjectives, twee and fey. Belle and Sebastian.
This is kissing man like a long walk home when the music stops. Take it to find me, took it to the park when you're on your own. It's a long walk home. Well, if they follow you, don't look back like Dylan.
So maybe the reason that I feel they're a guilty pleasure is because in the 90s, my girlfriend made so much fun of me for liking them.
Right.
All right. I know we're close to the end here, so I want to make sure we get them all in. The band I should have seen by now, I had a hard time with this because like Corby, I've gotten to see a lot of music. And like Robert, and I kind of wish I'd seen some iteration of Pink Floyd. Never have. That's an honorable mention. But I never thought that I would go my whole life without, and now I'll never get to, seeing this guy. Oh my God, it almost makes me cry just thinking about it.
You know, when I took the survey, this was the band that made me fall in love with music, and I'm like you, I never saw him, and I regret that, because there were a few times he came through town, and I really wanted to go, and I don't know why I didn't, because I loved him.
I saw him that second to the last time, American Airlines Center is unbelievable. So good.
And I've gotten to become friends over the years with Ben Montench, his keyboard player. I could have gone. I could have hung out.
Wow.
And I just always thought, oh, I'll have a chance. There is a lesson in that right there.
Yep.
Okay, finally, great band to see. I know music is subjective, all right? But I think that this is an objectively correct answer. The greatest rock and roll band to see live perform, and they're still playing, so go see them. Chair, hit it.
I've been locked up in east to the California beach. There's only one prison now, and
That's Cheap Trick, ladies and gentlemen.
Dang right.
Rick Nielsen on lead guitar. Robin Zander, the greatest voice in rock and roll. All apologies to Roger Daltrey.
I love great how they're drummer. Introduced.
Yeah.
Here's Bunny the greatest Carlos. Blanking rock and roll band in the world, yeah. Cheap Trick.
And this is off their seminal Live at Budokan album. And granted, they went back in and overdubbed guitars and added extra Japanese girls screaming, but that At Budokan album is so great. I know it's 1970s, and I know I'm an old man, but kids, trust me.
Yeah, I highly recommend their live show. It's incredible.
How many times have you seen them, Giorgio?
Probably three. Every time was great. The sound is really good. Really full, really loud.
Rhett, all I can say is job well done. That was fantastic.
That was great, Rhett.
Thanks, you guys. I appreciate you having me on, and I appreciate you guys working so hard from the bunker. You're doing a great job.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks.
Hey, we appreciate you working from your bunker.
Yeah,
so,
the red bunker.
Stay safe, and best of luck, and we'll be in touch down the road.
All right,
and
love
Friday
you,
night.
Yeah, Friday
love
night,
you, Rhett.
Keith. Love you, bye.
That's right. Friday bye, night.
Love you, too.
His set list.
Thanks
so
for doing this. That's the great Rhett Miller from the old 97s taking our musical survey and our new Big Show segment.